Some people say it's easy for Australian actors to capture the southern accent. Did you find that to be true?
I found it relatively easy. I think that it's probably easier for Australians and English actors to capture a southern accent than it is to capture some of the more northern rounded R's of the north. I did a little audition for a Minnesota accent, which I found the most difficult I had ever tried to get my mouth around, because it has all these curious sort of Swedish vowels in the middle of apparently otherwise Irish sounds. But the South is relatively easy because we don't say our R's either. Like the English, we say afternoon, not afternoon. But it's still something that I had to work on, and I worked with a dialect coach and Jessica Drake, whom I'd worked with before. I knew, in fact, I had worked with in playing the governor of Tennessee, or a state like Tennessee, in Last Dance for Bruce Beresford, and it was the scene in that in which I, in an argument with Rob Morrow at a party, refused the clemency for Sharon, the Sharon Stone character. That was the scene that was sent to Clint Eastwood as a sort of piece to this. Never interviewed me, saw that scene. My manager sent that to him and never told me that he was sending it, because the role was so eagerly contested by every actor in my age group that he didn't want to disappoint me. And he called me on, I remember, Good Friday morning, very early, after I'd been up late at night before, I can't imagine why. And he said, I know it's very early. Are you sitting down? He is choked up about something. They made an offer on a role. You won't believe this. Oh, God. It was all like that. It was really very emotional. And I understand now why. Because it is a wonderful role, a really wonderful role. And I've been knocking on the door for some time. And I'm an actor of 29 years' experience. And it's not until you are cast in a role like that that you realize that you've been cast as an actor and not as a sort of down under novelty. And you have broken the barrier that Shaw described as the two great cultures divided by a common language. And it was a wonderful experience for us.
First impression of Sonny, was it?
First impression of Sonny? Was a man of intelligence, a sense of humor, and a great friendliness. But then he had a reason to be friendly. But he would not have maintained that friendliness if it had not grown into something more. We spent a lot of time together for professional reasons, but also because we developed a real friendship and a respect for each other. I had to know the man. Sonny gave me to work with, as well as working with a dialect coach before I went there. We had Tim Monick there as well, who had in fact been the teacher of my dialect coach, Jessica Drake. And he was on set all the time, but I went there a couple of weeks early, 2.5 weeks early, with my family to live there and to simply absorb the accent around me, and to work with Sonny, to go to the jail, to see him in court, to come to an understanding of the role. The actor prepares that kind of research. I was knocked out when I discovered that Kevin Spacey had already been there for 2 weeks anyway. So. Oh, okay, Kevin. All right, so you were there earlier.
Is he still a lawyer?
No, he's still a lawyer. When he got to play the judge, as he does in it, all of his colleagues said, I can't believe it. He's already walking around, you know, behaving as if he was the judge. So he said, and all of my colleagues are being a lot nicer to me now.
It's been often the book was just in here talking about Savannah, mm-hmm. a place with a personality unlike anywhere else.
Yes.
Can you find out, what were your impressions of that world?
I love Savannah.
Why?
Oh, yeah. I think it's architecturally the most beautiful city I've seen in America. For, you know, historic reasons, it was spared by Sherman, and the architecture is of a particular period. I think it's very attractive. There are thousands of Victorian houses of, on a quite grand scale, and Victorian is an English British Empire symbol. I mean, it's that period, 19th century, early 19th century, and there's, you know, even late 18th century architecture remaining there. It's very attractive. Also, Savannah has become, it's interesting that the whole Jim Williams thing is a part of it. Jim was responsible for the preservation of and restoration of a lot of that historic district, and I think that there was a section. There's no doubt that there was a section of Savannah society that was opposed to what Jim was doing because he was preventing development. At that time, they were tearing down these Victorian mansions. And they were using what is called Georgia brick, this red brick, to rebuild, you know, houses in outer suburbs, and it was costumless to tear them down and use that brick and to buy new brick. So Jim Williams, with some others, but Jim was buying those houses for the cost of the bricks and restoring them. He helped to create the historic district. And so he was a pioneer in the preservation of that architecture. I have a personal experience of that because my parents were the first people in Australia to start a similar historic society in the city. So I have sympathy for that. But as well as that, there is now in Savannah College of Art and Design, which is one of the premier colleges of art and design in America at the moment. And people vie to get a position there. They have great scholarships and one thing another. But people with state-of-the-art design equipment, IBM or whoever it may be, send their new programs down there to be tested by these honors students. So you're not just dealing with a sort of an old place in mothballs and a relic or something. You're dealing with a place that is full of an extraordinary vitality, students from all over America. The only time that it seems to be the old South is when come the summer and all those students go away and you're left with this sort of, you know, quiet city of just about the right size. And a lot of people would like to live there. Of course, I understand in the middle of summer that it's very steamy, very hot, no one wants to be there. But in the winter, you can have a fire in the house, and it's a beautiful place. It's very beautiful. We made very welcome. And there was a sense of vital life, the restoration of the theater there, the music that was being played there, the Wallflowers concert, the whole student life there. It felt like Berkeley must have felt, you know, I mean, 30 years ago. I mean, it was like it's for all these people coming there to do something. And to do something exciting. And the Savannah College of Art and Design owns something like 30 odd buildings and owning more and more of the big old institutional buildings like the schools and the hospitals and converting them to faculties of the college. So it's, you know, it's a vital city in that sense, but small.
It has more than one taxi though.
Has more than one taxi? Yeah. Oh, sure. It has a lot more than one taxi, and it has Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil tours. If you'd like to go on one of those, they'll take you around, and I'll show you that. There's a wonderful tale of them taking them around on a tour just at the time when We were doing the shooting one of the scenes, and there was Kevin Spacey as Jim Williams, and he looks incredibly like Jim Williams, the photographs of the real man, standing at the window, looking out the window of his house, and these people going past, and the guy saying, "And over there on the left, we have, that was the Jim Williams house, and off we go." It's like, did I really see that?
What is it like doing a scene? Have you ever had to do a scene with somebody quite like Lady Chatterley before?
There is no one quite like Lady Chatterley. In the sense of having to do a scene with someone who is not a professional film actor, but
she's an actor.
I mean, there's a range of acting, isn't there, from vaudeville through to mime through to big tragedy, and there's no doubt that she makes a living as an actor.
Her whole life is a performance.
Well, maybe not her whole life. Maybe there's a moment when Frank's sitting there going, "Gee, it was a tough day," you know. But there's no doubt about the performance, and there's no doubt about that capacity. In the same way, I think it was clever and brave. And I think it worked. When you know what he was doing when he cast her as her and gave Sonny the role of the judge. Yeah, I mean, nobody knows better how a judge behaves than that man, and he's not going to put it on. And he's an actor anyway. An attorney is an advocate, is an actor, so there's that quality there, and there was that quality in Chatterley. And although she was very nervous at first and a little undisciplined, and it was improvised and bits and pieces, working with Cusack initially and then finally in the court. And there were times when she was nervous, and Clint just made sure that she was not, made it very easy. He is, I'm sure by now, everyone knows, he is famous among actors as the actor's director.
Well, everybody says he runs a very comfortable set.
Oh, unbelievable. It's unbelievable. It's never been like that before in my life, that easy. It's been good, but I was asked at home, you know, what was it like among my peers, and I said it was a mythological beast. And 29 years of acting, you get a script that's right, you get an ensemble cast that's right, you get everything, but there's an argument between the producer and the director, or there's something, there's a fly in the ointment of some kind or other, but you feel that if you did get it, it's like sailing, you know, if you got the wind right, and you got the boat right, and this is the right condition, it would just go like that. Just like that. But if it never happens in 29 years, then it is a kind of a mythological beast, you know? And there it was. And there it was. And it was so reassuring. It was so reassuring to have that happen. I mean, 29 years down the track, and there it is. Great role, great company. There was not one moment of people stamping their little foot. There wasn't one. I mean, we never worked a 10-hour day. We knocked off early on Fridays. We came in under budget, under schedule. I mean, the good script, no problem with the right. I can't tell you. It took me a week to find out who the first AD was. There was no one in command. There was this man, this quiet man, whose knowledge of what he wanted to do in the company of people who understood that. Guided this thing easily through day after day after day. I never felt as if I was being conducted from a distance. I never felt as if I was being cajoled. It felt as if there was a fellow running alongside me saying yes, or moving a little to the right, a little to the left. It was a collaborative thing of the most exciting kind.
One of the trickier things I would think about playing Sonny is this sort of Matlock syndrome where outsiders look on a Southern lawyer and immediately underestimate him because he's drawing. He's got the University of Georgia mascot bulldog, which is the love of his life. How do you play that? How do you play somebody that we're supposed to underestimate and then gradually come to appreciate?
Well, I think you have to give some credit to the writers for that. it's there. This is an interesting parallel in the other lawyer I played in Break and Morat. Comes in stumbling and finally becomes forced to be eloquent. But Sonny wasn't forced to be eloquent. This was a man who had, at that stage, already been president of the Georgia Bar Association. And you only have to read his notes or listen to his transcript from court, which he gave me. So I listened to that. I drove around in my car listening to nothing else. And I spoke with nothing other than, it's not just a Georgian accent, it's geeky. It's particular, even regional thing in Savannah. And I can remember my little boy who was there with me saying, "Daddy, are you going to talk like that all the time?" And I said, "Well, I am while I'm here." And I did. And I don't think you talk any other way, because you have to. You know, and if you do that, then when the lines change or something's required to be improvised, you don't have to work out how to say it. And Tim Monick was there. He made some corrections every now and then. My Australian vowels were coming into it or whatever, but every now and then, in a moment of excitement. But it was always there. And of course, I had my model was there all the time. Sonny was there. I only had to listen to Sonny in the morning and say, "Yep, hell, that's it."
You know, some actors, when you're playing a real person, some like to meet that real person before they shoot, some don't. You don't have a choice since he's sitting up there on the
bench. That's right.
While you're making Sonny's big plea to the jury, what's going on in your mind that the real Sonny is sitting up there? He could overrule you.
Well, I knew that he would not. We had discussed it. I had taken some lines of his. John Lee Hancock had already placed some of Sonny's lines, real lines from the summation. But I took some others that I thought were very pertinent and placed them in that speech. Of course, with John Lee Hancock's permission and with Clint's understanding that they would be there, I presented to him and said, "This is what I would like to say." And those lines are placed there. In particular, the piece about, I love that thing where he says, "Does that surprise you that a detective would lie?" Now that's direct from Sonny's real Sonny's. Well, of course he will. His hand back a lot. How's he going to deal? No. And it's a lovely way of letting the detective off, because he's going to have to live in the same town as letting the people off and saying, "Hey, I'm not arguing against the law. I'm telling you that if this is the way it's set up, this is what happens." They made a fundamental error. They really went after Jim for all sorts of reasons. You can make your own decisions about why they went after him. I mean, some of them are implied quite directly in the script. And there's not much doubt that there was a lot of that going on. They went after him. And if they hadn't been so enthusiastic about getting him, they would not have charged him with murder one. They could have put him away for some time on other degrees of murder. There's no doubt about that. There's no doubt that he killed the boy. It's a question of under what circumstances. They defeated, and let's not forget that, although it happens quite quickly in the movie, it took a long time. It was four trials, in effect, and it went on for nearly 2 years, and Jim Williams was in that jail for 18 months. I went and had my, one of my bits of actor's preparation was I went and had my hair cut by Sonny's barber. I said, "That would be good. Now I can talk to his barber. Now tell me, what's this man really like? Tell me some Sonny stories." And he didn't tell me any Sonny stories much. He told me gags, you know. He said, "Did he tell you all those bad jokes?" But he had also been Jim Williams' barber. He used to go and visit him in the jail, and I talked to him about Jim. And there's no doubt, see, there was a real affection there. Sonny took something on, in a way, as a matter of honor. It wasn't simply that he was Jim Williams' attorney, because he wasn't. initially, the first two cases that they lost, the first three trials, it was only Sonny came in on the fourth trial. And he had been to Jim Williams' parties. I mean, lots of people had been there. He enjoyed Jim Williams' parties. He enjoyed his company, and I think he enjoyed also what Jim had brought, in the sense of a renewed sense of pride in the historic district. And there's a Siler Avenue somewhere on the edge of town. Sonny's great-grandfather came there and had a market garden and a little pony ride and a little beer hall and that sort of thing. And so he felt that this was a positive contribution to the community. There's also, particularly in Savannah, it may not be true of other places, but particularly in Savannah and certainly of that part of Georgia, the establishment, it was the last, I'm teaching you on history, but it was the last of the states, it was the last of the 13 states. It was established by a Mancipus, established by Oglethorpe. And it was a group of a whole lot of, and it was Huguenots, there were Jews, it's the oldest synagogue of the Reformed Jewish church in America. And it was this sense that here was a chance for people out of debtors' prisons and that sort of thing. Here was a chance for people to live and make a new life. And because there was such a mixed group of people in the first place, there was a real sense of live and let live. There was a real sense of tolerance for a particular way of life. And so I know that among Sonny and his fellows, there was this sense that it's really bad to go after someone for anything like that. That's their business. What goes on behind there, so as that story he tells about, fall from porch proves fatal. That's the way. It's like, hey, why would we go after the guy and his son and put it all over the page about his out with the gangster's mall and and all of that stuff? None of that was in the paper. Not because somebody was trying to hide something, but because there's no point in going after someone about that sort of thing. There is a sense that you can live your own life in a particular way and just get on with it. It's a small community, and people may feel that it hides its secrets, but nobody, it wasn't a secret to anyone in the community. It was no secret about Jim's homosexuality, and no secret about the parties being, parties with the whole gay young men there. In fact, it was enjoyable. That they felt it was enjoyable and a part of their sophistication that the society could contain that. It was so it divided the society in a particular way when it came to the trial. And I think that a part of what Sonny became involved with was a real defense of a particular kind of liberty in the community. And I know that he felt that. Yes, I know that that's what he said to me. So I was able to feel that in my defense.
Thank you very much. How much bonding did you do with the dog as you're getting up and leaving?
How much
bonding did you have to do with the dog?
Not a lot. We spent some time together, but I didn't have to do a lot of bonding. He's easy to get on with. He's a very public figure, that dog.
Thank you. The most famous person on the film.
Yes. Oh, yes.